making me uncomfortable lately in all of this that I wonder, and you call it whatever you want, but maybe there is a conspiracy here, I don't know, but it seems to me like somebody's pulling the strings in the back of the story here, and I think it's got us all talking over each other's heads. It's got us talking away from each other. And then we're in these violent modes, the fact that, you know, you suck and I'm right, and now I want to throw a rock at your head. And this is what's happening out there on the streets. And you seem to say that some of that's okay, but I don't think so. When you start burning cars and throwing rocks and bricks like they did in Baltimore, I don't go for that. You start seeing that on college campuses with physical violence. That is not a form of what our founders said, let's just do this. It was peaceful protest. It wasn't protest that I want to tear your head off or physically have violence to hurt you. I think that's wrong, Kristen. I can't agree with that.
So I think, Malcolm, I think the thing is that you started in the right direction, this idea that there's someone behind us with strings. And there is, and that's the media, because the media portrays the images that they want us to see.
Amen, amen, sister. You got my 100% attention.
Yeah. And it's very well thought out. It's not haphazard that we see these images. In Baltimore, I lived in Baltimore during that quote-unquote riot. There was
really?
One small block where it happened. It was very small and isolated. 90% of what was going on there was very peaceful. But they showed the same 10 seconds in loop over and over and over and over again to try to really push down this idea that it was such a violent uprising that happened in Baltimore.
Now, wait a minute. So in Baltimore, you didn't see that, Kristen. It was very micro, what you're saying.
It was very micro.
Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure.
You know, sometimes I need a safe space to kind of crawl into. You know, I think back growing up as a young man, there was always something about that rainy day, when you could take a rainy day and maybe take a good book. I don't remember those days. Do you remember them, Sal?
No, actually, I don't remember those days. Sorry, Malcolm, I can't help you out there.
All right. Do you remember those days, Kristen?
I might have to go with Sally on this one. We're going to leave you out there by yourself.
Oh, boy. You see where this show is going to go today, friends. You know I'm in a whole lot of trouble. Sally Fernandez joins us from Florence, Italy, and Dr. Kristen H. from Washington, D.C. And so we are talking about, well, what we've been talking about a lot in recent months and years, the politically correct and safe spaces. Are they molding the next generation? What's going on? And, you know, a lot of this comes into, again, the sound bites. I truly believe that a lot of the sound bites and a lot of the media conversations and internet conversation, for that matter, as well, that they are molding the next generation, because it's like an infiltration system. And the more and more, and I don't have a problem. I love the whole concept of our First Amendment. I love what we have here in America. There's no doubt about it. We're privileged people here. But sometimes I think people have to rationalize the conversation, and then, you know, they pull out the First Amendment when it's convenient for them. When it's not convenient for them, I do say, and you're seeing that on a lot of universities, they have a tendency to turn it off. I want to go first to Dr. Kristen H., and I want you to help set this up for me, Kristen, if you would please. I'm seeing that with the universities a lot, that there's a real problem out there. Are you seeing that at all, or do you think everything is good in paradise there?
So it's interesting. I think I have a pretty unique position to talk about this. I have been in school every year of my life, it feels like, since I've started school, with the exception of one. So I've been on a lot of college campuses. I'm a professor on a college campus now. So I am very familiar with college campuses, and I love the college campus atmosphere. So this is a topic I'm interested in that I've never actually talked about before. So I think this will be fun. I think the issue with the word politically correct or safe space is that they've become really politically charged. I think what we actually see happening on college campuses is that students are stepping up and stepping out when they don't like the language or the words that people are using. So it's sort of like this idea of the First Amendment rights going in both ways. So people can say things or do things that students may find offensive, and now those students are standing up and saying, no, what you're doing sounds offensive. And so I think that's kind of the way that the First Amendment right works, is that you can say whatever you want to say, but people can also say it right back to you. And so I think that is what we see happening a lot on our college campuses. Our students are becoming more active and they're becoming more vocal about the things that they will and will not accept.
Well, and I want to, let me come back with you right on this, Kristen, please, because thanks for setting that up that way. But here's the thing. You take recently Ann Coulter, you take that Milo character, okay, and you take a lot of these, conservative speakers, if you will. In recent weeks and months, they've been being shut down on college campuses, and many of them, their speeches they've been turned away because of exactly what you just said. Now, they want to hear certain things, but they don't want to hear certain things. So there's the argument about that. Do they have a right to do that? That they want to filter out certain conversations. It's really not a two-way street. Is that fair?
I think it's this whole back to individual liberty. Is that I think that when you have individual liberty, you get the right to decide what you do and do not listen to. And I'm not saying it's a right or wrong, so I'm not making a value judgment, but I do think that the essence of individual liberty is that you get to mine what information.
All right, so now I'm going to give you that. Let's keep going. So if they start protesting now, and they're protesting and what have you, and they stop the person from entering, should the college campus step up and get involved, Kristen, to make that a safe space for that speaker to have that word? Should they?
I think it depends on how controversial the speaker is. And so I do think that a piece of college campuses are to sometimes push the boundaries and push the envelope and to maybe invite speakers or talks or topics that are going to challenge the students to think outside of their norms. So I think that that's the responsibility of the college, is to try to help their students do that. But I also think it's the responsibility of the students to respond to that in any way that they see fit. And so
say any way they see fit, that's the next thing I want to actually talk to you about. Because the problem is, what they've seen fit in recent times, Kristen, is they're throwing rocks, bricks, burning things, creating violence. This isn't a peaceful protest by any stretch. How about that? Is that a good thing?
So I would have to know exactly what you're referring to in terms of...
Well, let's look at Berklee College, just in recent memory here, where they had physical protest. You had all kinds of arrests. They were burning things, throwing things. We're talking violence now. What about violence? Is that condoned on college campuses? Because it looks pretty rough on the cameras. And when you get the media in there portraying those... And let me say this, Kristen. Those images are not just portrayed in America. Here's what else is happening. They are filtered around the world. And then the world looks and says, look at those crazy Americans again, these peace-loving Americans who think they talk about, like, they think their shit doesn't stink over there. And then what do? And this is really talked about. I know this from all my friends around the world who tell me this. We're being portrayed as a bunch of buffoons who can't seem to figure out what the hell free speech means.
No, I mean, I do. There's a lot of things that you brought up in that one little sound bites. I think there's a couple of things that are going on. Calling a protest violence, I think, is interesting, because we also see the same thing happen when sports teams lose. And we've seen this happen in Boston, and the sports teams lose and they start turning over cars and flipping things, and we call it passion. We don't call it violence. And so I think the words that we use are interesting, and they're loaded and they mean a lot. So is that violence? I wouldn't call that violence. Would I call it necessarily a peaceful protest? Maybe it's not a peaceful protest. Is a peaceful protest always required? Maybe not. And I mean, I think that's the question, is what does a protest mean? How do you protest? When is enough enough? When is it not a peaceful protest? I mean, I grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas. I went to Central High School, and I saw the images. I still went to Central High School when we were under court order that we had to be 50% Black, 50% white. And I saw the images of Black students being walked into school by the marshals were walking them in, and people were throwing rocks and screaming at them. And they thought that that was their right to protest. And, you know, so it's interesting that when is protest okay? When is it not okay? And I think it's difficult when you see someone protesting for something that you don't agree with, or when it's not against it's not in line with your own ideologies. But when it is in line with your ideologies, we seem to be less concerned with it. And so I pushed back on what is a proper protest? What does it mean? Is it okay? When is it not okay? People protest when they're unhappy. That's the way that governments change. Governments are supposed to be reflective of the people. People's institutions want them to be reflective of their own ideologies. And people protest when they don't like what's happening. I personally don't have an issue with protest. And I don't think that they have to only be silent protests.
All right, so Sally, bring it back to, bring it back to the Nixon era, bring it back to the, the 60s and 70s in that era of time, as we look back in history a moment, and you think about the protests that were going on there, the protests against the Vietnam War, and all of that. I mean, there were physical protests there with burning cars and rocks and bricks and things of that nature, was there?
There's always been protest, and you know, you can go back to European immigrants coming over and Irish need not apply and what happened during that scene. You know, you've got the Japanese internment camps, you've got McCarthy, you've got the gay movement. But, you know, Christian just mentioned the word, it's about words, you know, how you interpret the words of protest. Well, the political correctness debate isn't necessarily about the protests that are taking, because that is free speech, and both sides have the right to go out and protest. I have a problem with the violent aspect of it, but they do have the right to protest. But the debate in terms of free speech on universities, which is something that really permeates throughout society, the question is whether students should be protected from words and ideas that make them uncomfortable. And that's what the whole PC argument is about. And so we've created these trigger words like, well, trigger warning, microaggression, safe spaces. So it's this whole culture that's being created today with American students mostly, and hearing opinions that cause damage to their psyche. And it's how the campuses are reacting to that. And I think what's happened with this political correctness, but let me just carry the thought that the political correctness whole thing, it's forcing the rest of us to live in some hyper politically correct, squeaky clean environment. And the question is that the environment that we want to teach our young adults? Do we want to enable them, or do we want to teach them to confront opposing issues? But I think right now what's happening is through the safe spaces and all the things that we're doing to coddle them, we're just preparing our children to kind of wear emotional diapers for the rest of their life.
I disagree 100% with that, Sally. And I think that you're defining what a safe space is incorrectly. A safe space is not about protecting people from opposing views. That's exactly what college campuses do, is that they try to help bring opposing views. They try to help bring opposing views to light so that way students can grapple with these ideas. So safe space and tribune are not about opposing views. It's about people that have suffered from some sort of abuse and some sort of trauma that has a psychological impact on that student and wanting to make sure that that student isn't triggered in a way that's harmful. So I think what happens is sometimes the language around safe spaces is just wrong. This isn't a very liberal college saying we don't want to grapple with any sort of conservative ideas. That's not what this is. This is about a girl who's sexually assaulted saying, if we're going to talk about sexual assault, I want to be aware, because if I just was raped 2 weeks ago, I might not be ready to come to class and talk about that yet, if that's going to be what's in my face. And so I think we just need to be careful about language, because words matter. This isn't about opposing views. I teach a class on health policy and management, and that's what we do all day long, is debate opposing views. And I push back on my liberal students to understand the conservative side, and I push back on my conservative students to understand the liberal side, and all professors I know do the same thing. So I think that this safe space political correct conversation has been tainted and not actually representing what's going on in actual policy.
Well, if you're actually doing that, then if that's what's really happening, as Christian points out at her school, now is that my next question would be, is that a norm? Is that an anomaly? What is that exactly? But Sally, that was not my understanding. In fact, it would be my favor to ask the school system to do exactly what Christian just put out there. You understand, would be to balance the scales. But that's not what I'm seeing out there, Sally. Can you speak to that as well? Are you seeing it?
There are some schools that want to have uniform policies requiring faculty to provide trigger warnings. but that would be a violation of academic freedom. There are other professors who want to use their own discretion as to whether or not to provide trigger warnings, to allow students to choose whether to reckon with the material in the classroom during the hours. I actually agree with the latter. I think the professor has, they know the student body, they should have the choice to decide. But the problem is you don't want to disrupt other students. So by removing certain challenging subjects because they might affect a few, you're hurting other students who want to be there and learn. And, you know, there are many professors who disagree with what Christian just said. There's a couple examples to the bizarre side of it is that there was one law student who asked a professor not to use the word violate, as in this conduct violates the law. Now, this is a law student because they felt the term might trigger distress. And I think we all remember when the Columbia Law School allowed students to delay their exams after the grand jury, the decision in the Ferguson case when the police officer was not indicted. It was due to trauma the decision imposed. But to counterbalance that, the bizarre side of it, Professor Nadine Strozin, who's well known at Harvard, she points out the fallacy. She refuses to use trigger warning, saying that robust freedom of speech is a prerequisite for equality. She tells students that the entire course is one painful, horrible episode of human misery after the other. She states that it's impossible to know which part of the class might trigger a trauma. Could it be the divorce, the child born without a nervous system? Could it be a falsely accused of a crime? And she goes on and on and on. But what she says, she believes that if a student wants a well-rounded education that prepares them for the world, then they must leave the need for safe spaces and triggers at the door. And that goes back to safe spaces. You know, society has safe spaces. We have hospitals, clinics, therapists, legal representation. The schools, the campuses themselves have therapy group. But what the students are requesting is you know, not to even mention subject matter in their own discipline if they find it troubling. You can't ignore this because what we're not doing, we're not training them to deal with real life. I mean, when they leave college, they're going to go into the real world and they're not going to be able to run to safe spaces. They're going to have to deal with and make decisions based on things they don't like. So protecting them from.
Yeah, but what Christian is saying is they're not doing that, Sally. She's saying they're not doing that.
It's difficult to have a conversation about something when you're defining it wrong. I mean, this is not what a trigger warning or a safe space is. And then you just like contradicted yourself. You said that there's a lot of safe spaces in the world. And then you said students can't run to safe spaces. And so it's like, which one is it? We have trigger warnings all the time. All of our movies that we watch have a warning at the beginning. This may have difficult content that it may not be appropriate for children, or it's going to have high sexual content if it's not something that you want to deal with. And so we're okay with trigger warnings in our society. This isn't something new. Like, this is frustrating me because I think that we have a tendency to let media make us believe something that it's not. This is a BuzzFeed article started all of this about 3 years ago. They reported on trigger warnings and people just ran off with it and made it something completely different than what it actually is.
Well, Christian, hold on a minute, Christian. That happened well before that article. Listen, this whole conversation that we're talking right now, this was really hot and heavy through the entire Obama administration. This goes back at least 10 years. We've been having this conversation on national radio, but you just put up an interesting point that really bothers me or bugs me, because I question and I wonder all the time, Christian, exactly what you just said, which is this. Is it possible that this is not as widespread on universities as they portray in the media? Is it possible? Is it possible that our professors are teaching both sides of a conversation? Is it even remotely possible? Because if I follow the stories right now, and if I follow the media talking points of what I understand, I would believe we have a real problem on our university grounds.
And I think that's frustrating, is that I'm not talking from picking out this one obscure instance where this student at a law school asked the student not to use the word violation, which I think we all would agree is a bit ridiculous. And you can always find examples of ridiculousness. And so I think it's really difficult to base the conversation in ridiculousness. And so But the overarching theme, and I have hundreds of colleagues who are professors who teach across universities, across the world, and all of us are making sure that we present both sides of the issues and we foster debate and conversation in our classrooms. And even if I didn't have that experience, the definition of trigger warnings and safe spaces is no way to avoid disagreement or debate. All that trigger warnings is about is that if a student has some sort of trauma, that you want to make sure that you aren't somehow going to, you're not going to somehow bump into that trauma and have that student have an episode. This started back in the 1900s when psychologists were working to classify war neurosis and PTSD, and they wanted to make sure that they weren't triggering military men when they were coming back into the society. And that's where this idea of trigger warnings even came from, is that
Christian, let's just turn it around then. So if it's about if it's not political correctness, it's not trigger warnings, it's not microaggression, it's safe spaces, it's all being misdefined and misrepresented. Let's look at it from the college professor side, because what all of this has done is created a culture that has given students an enormous power to just sack professors when they don't disagree. Now, there's one example that the University of Chicago Dean's Office sent a class of 2020 a preemptive letter that stated, we do not support so-called trigger warnings. We do not cancel invited speeches because their topics might prove controversial. We do not condone the creation of intellectual safe spaces where individuals can retreat from ideas and perspective at odds with their own. The school's academic culture, Dean Ellison said, may challenge you and even cause discomfort. The dean was castigated for the statement, which scores of donors pulled back from, and gave more control to the students. And it gets even worse than that, because you may remember the whole Yale Halloween costume controversy. That came about when the Yale professor, Erica Christakis, noted that her husband, Nicholas, who's also a Yale professor, said, if you don't like a costume someone is wearing, look away, or tell them you're offended. Talk to each other. Free speech and the ability to tolerate offense are the hallmark of free and open society. That caused them to be unfairly bombarded with criticism from students and the university, and it forced them to resign. There is nothing in either of those statements that should feel that it's going to cause somebody to run to a safe space or it's offended somebody. That's intelligent dialogue.
I mean, I think that I have the Chicago letter pulled up on my screen as well. And so I've also read this. I think the issue about free speech that always gets me is that people want to say, I have the free speech to say whatever I want to say. And people have the free speech to respond back. And it's about checks and balances. So this idea of students having more power is absolutely what we want. We don't want to allow institutions of power to just run off and do anything and make rules. We absolutely want students to have the power to organize and to protest about things that they disagree in. That's exactly what we should be teaching the younger generation, that if a professor does something that they disagree with, or if a dean writes a letter that they disagree with, and they want to organize and push change, why are we upset with that? The students are
because they're not legitimate arguments. That's why.
Now, so that's a different question. So we can argue about the legitimacy of their arguments.
Let's do that right after a quick pause here. We're talking about tolerance, maybe? I'm wondering where the tolerance is in all of this. Again, it seems like we have a lot to say, but we don't really listen. I hope you're listening out there. We'll be right back after this quick pause with Sally Fernandez and Dr. Kristen H. We are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, I'm not sure why we take our health for granted, but I know that many of us do. Include me in that company. Recently, I had a couple of health scares that got my attention real quick. I started a new product called Healthy Cell.
I took it for about 3 weeks, and man, I started to feel really good. I found myself sleeping better at night, had more energy in the day, and less stress and anxieties, and just feeling better overall. Well, with those kind of results, I knew I had to do something, so I reached to the company directly with a request to bring Healthy Cell back to America out loud, and here it is. Well, typically you'd pay $110 plus shipping and handling. Well, now you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan plus free shipping. That's right, they'll pick up the shipping and you pay just $79.99. Use the code OUTLOUD on HealthyCell.com or just click the banner on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, listen, we are having a very dynamic, conversation here today on, RPC and safe spaces molding the next generation. And I think a big word here that I want to put under the hot burner I mentioned on the way out of the last segment is tolerance. It seems we are less tolerant these days, and I think we're all politically charged. And sometimes I don't really understand it when, at the end of the day, I want to say, I think we're all in it for the same reasons. I think, but it's a means to an end. How we get there, we seem to use different methods in how we get there. Or like even this conversation we're having right now with Dr. Kristen H. and Sally Fernandez, and myself included, it's like we have a different way of sometimes, listen, we're sort of this is a micro look of everything that's going on out there because we are sometimes misconstruing facts out there. We misunderstand what we really mean, what the intent of those words are. Or you think one way, I think another way, this person thinks another way, and right away, we're at odds with each other. It seems like a tall order here, what's happening. And a lot of this comes into not just the universities, Christian, but it comes even into the high school, where even the college, where even the textbooks, there's a lot of controversy in how the textbooks and taking history out of the textbooks and what should be in the textbooks. And I don't know, there's something that's making me uncomfortable lately in all of this that I wonder, call it whatever you want, but maybe there is a conspiracy here, I don't know. But it seems to me like somebody's pulling the strings in the back of the story here. And I think it's got us all talking over each other's heads. It's got us talking away from each other. And then we're in these violent modes, the fact that, you suck and I'm right and now I want to throw a rock at your head. And this is what's happening out there on the streets. And you seem to say that some of that's okay, but I don't think so. When you start burning cars and throwing rocks and bricks like they did in Baltimore, I don't go for that. You start seeing that on college campuses with physical violence. That is not a form of what our founders said, let's just do this. It was peaceful protest. It wasn't protest that I want to tear your head off or physically have violence to hurt you. I think that's wrong, Christian. I can't agree with that.
I think the thing that you started in the right direction, this idea that there's someone behind us with strings. And there is, and that's the media, because the media portrays the images that they want us to see.
Amen. Amen, sister. You got my 100% attention.
Yeah. And it's very well thought out. It's not haphazard that we see these images. In Baltimore, I lived in Baltimore during that quote-unquote riot. There was
really?
One small where it happened. It was very small and isolated. 90% of what was going on there was very peaceful. But they show the same 10 seconds in loop over and over and over and over again to try to really push down this idea that it was such a violent uprising that happened in Baltimore.
Now, wait a minute. So in Baltimore, you didn't see that, Kristen. It was very micro, what you're saying.
It was very micro. I mean, I was literally a block away from where that was happening. Like, I think I was at a coffee shop or something. Like, and it was not nearly. We have to be careful about consumers and information. And this is something that I teach my students all the time. I said, I want you to walk out of this classroom being a consumer of information and being able to tell when something is biased and when something isn't biased and where and why that bias may exist. And I think that is the real skill that most Americans just simply do not have. We take what's given to us and we take it as fact. There are so many ways to manipulate statistics and to manipulate data and to manipulate videos to try to engender these feelings of fear. And I really think that is what our system, the part of it, is creating. creating this fear. It's creating this fear on one side that, oh my gosh, we're so over the top.
Well, they want us to think the sky is falling, Kristen, every day of the week. I mean, it's like the sky is falling. It really is the Chicken Little syndrome.
Because when the sky is falling, you can take more control. When people are fearful, they're more likely to give up some of their liberties. They're more likely to give up their
rights. It's power, they're seizing power. It's always about power. I always, Kristen, I always bring it back to power. The power heads on the far left and the far right, that's what they're looking for, to control the environment, to control the people. I find it very interesting. I really like the way you just framed this, okay, that we're being manipulated here.
The media is out of control, but they're going to be out of control for a long time. And we can't start sounding like Trump, where we're going after the media every time we turn around. What we can do in the universities is teach these students for critical thinking. Teach them what's out there. Show them all the news. Let them make decisions. Let them have discussions about what's real, what's not real, what's fake. The problem is we're not gendering that kind of conversation across the universities. Christian may be doing it, but, you know, with all respect, you can't speak for all universities, and there's enough evidence from the Ivy Leagues that they're not doing that.
Sally, I went to Yale. I went to Ivy League, and I know exactly what happened in my 4 years of education, and it's exactly what you're describing. And so it's interesting to me. I'm telling you, I experienced it, and the majority of my colleagues went to Yale as well, because we all went to school together, and I have friends who went to Harvard and Princeton and Columbia and all of the Ivy Leagues, and this is exactly the type of education that we had. And the point that you brought up about Yale, I thought what is so interesting is Malcolm talked about power, that when you talk about a university setting, the students have the least amount of power, and the administrators have the most power. And so what students have to do is when something happens that they disagree with, they organize. And what I heard before we left is that the issue wasn't with the organization. The issue really isn't with the trigger warnings. And the issue really isn't even with the safe spaces. The issue is you don't agree in why those students are saying that's a trigger warning for them. Or you don't agree that they don't like the costume and that they're protesting against it. And to me, that is a little bit unfair. It's not fair for me to try to lay on my values onto other students about what is and isn't important to them. And I think that, to me, is the crux of the issue. So this feels coded to me. We're fighting against trigger warnings, and we're fighting against these safe spaces. It's because we disagree with the people who are saying that they need them. And so that's the reason why I haven't based the conversation in race, but let's base it in a woman who's been sexually assaulted. I think that we all agree that she deserves a trigger warning, that if she's going to go to class and she was raped or sexually assaulted or molested as a kid, and that might trigger something in her, that she wants to know that that's going to happen ahead of time. So if she needs to go to a therapist or a counselor, or she just needs to sit that conversation out, that she has the right to choose that for herself. So I So the issue, you don't disagree with safe spaces, and you don't disagree with trigger warnings. You disagree with when people have safe spaces and trigger warnings for things that don't align with your ideals. And how is that First Amendment fair, Sally?
Excuse me, I think you just put a lot of words in my mouth. I don't disagree with it because it disagrees with something. I mean, I'm not making a judgment call in terms of what they decide. What I'm saying is by all these words, microaggression, trigger warning, safe spaces, it's creating a culture where we are not reinforcing the fact that actually universities are reinforcing the fact that students are not equipped to live in a free society. I mean, what we need to do is feelings are taking priority over facts. I mean, how do we evaluate what is the truth? So I'm not talking about that I disagree. I mean, if there's a student that has some kind of trauma for whatever reason it is, they have the right to get out of class, talk to the professor later, go to the professor ahead of time. There are all kinds of ways that they can manage that. But we're making decisions for the whole student body. There are students in there that just want to go in there and they want to get all the information and they want to get an education. They want to have discussions and they want to move on and start dealing with life. But so I'm not judging people based on what they think or what, because I can't judge them. I mean, I can't determine what their triggers are. But I'm saying that we're creating a culture instead of just teaching people critical thinking, discuss the issues. There are other mechanisms to take care of a smaller population of people who have issues. I mean, there are other ways to handle that. And so I'm just talking about the culture it's creating.
So you're saying that the existence of trigger warnings creates a culture?
I'm saying that the pressure it puts on certain teachers and certain people to do it or to not do it is just unrealistic, because I quoted one professor. I mean, there's no way. She's teaching law. She's going to teach about every despicable thing that goes on. And if you want to be a lawyer, you're going to have to deal with these issues. If you have a problem with it, maybe you're getting the wrong profession, or you're trying to.
The definition of a trigger warning isn't saying that professors are going to stop teaching this material. It's saying I'm going to warn my students that this is happening before it happens, so they can make whatever personal decision they need to make for themselves. And I think that is it's a definition issue that we're having. Is that
I already said trigger warnings I didn't have a problem with. I said I was perfectly comfortable with professors using their discretion and how they want to use it based on the subject matter and the students.
So which one do you feel like is having more of the, because what I'm hearing you say is that we're creating this culture where you don't think that students are going to be able to deal with the real world because they're being pacified. And I understand is, what do you feel like is doing that? What about safe space creates a world where students are being pacified?
There's these extremes that you read in the news, and I agree they're extremes. But I just think if you're teaching young adults, that if there's something that upsets you, that you can just dismiss it, you can ignore it, you can go away, you don't have to deal with it, then that's not the way to handle, because it doesn't happen in real life.
And I agree.
We're supposed to be teaching these people to go out and to be able to manage the challenges that they're going to be facing.
I just
think the culture is setting up a bad premise.
I agree with that 100%. I think that the responsibility of higher education is not for people to ignore things that make them uncomfortable. And I think that that goes in both directions. So there was also a lot of pushback about a school that wanted to have a class that required all students to learn about slavery, and including slavery in textbooks. And a lot of places have pushed back that they don't want to include that history, and that all students shouldn't have to learn those things. And so I think that we would both agree that just because slavery makes us uncomfortable, or just about talking about race makes us uncomfortable, or talking about feminism makes us uncomfortable, or talking about homosexuality makes us uncomfortable, that we can't turn away from those things because they exist and we have to learn how to confront them. So I think that we would agree to that.
Yeah, it sounds like you do agree. And I want to say two things here. I find that we agree far more in this country than we even really recognize. There's so much that connects us than rather divides us, but we use the dividing mechanisms to lead the conversation. I just had this conversation, I swear to both of you, today, this morning, with another very interesting lady who I suggested to her, she may want to reframe the conversation a little bit, and instead of leading with what divides us, as you're doing with your movement and what you're doing, ma'am, you may want to lead it with what connects us and get to this in another more gentle way. There are other ways to do this. But when you first start the conversation off and your goal is to piss the other team off or the other party off, you're not going to accomplish anything. And it's almost always going to end in a problematic situation, whether that's a physical deal or not. Like that reporter who just got ransacked from the politician, the congressman in Montana, who were struck to physical violence, didn't like something they said, and right away lambasted him and ended up winning the election. But the point is, you know, when we lead with what divides us up front, I never see that being a win-win. When there is so much that connects us back as a people that we should talk about and bridge the gap. You know, I think of our schools and I think of the universities. I see so many children today that are both liberally conservative. You know, where all this comes from, Sally, a lot of it is just what we're teaching the generation. Again, we had this conversation about millennials and baby boomers that I had with both of you. And I got to tell you both that, you know, this is the problem of the current generation, the parents who have created this mess. Again, it's, to me, it's the power brokers who've taken control of the conversation, and that's in what we've got left. What we got left is this hostility. It's a total hostility. When what are we really looking for here? We're looking for a safe environment. Yes, we want less crime and terrorism. Yes, we want what's good for our kids and our families. Yes. It's all, there's so many things that we're looking to strive for that as a common group that connects us, that it just makes me sometimes shake my head in disbelief to think, wow, we fall so far from the conversation of what really matters in this country. And you know, by the time, and it really does worry me, friends, because we can sit there and chuckle and think all the time that it doesn't matter and why we're arguing and debating ourselves, and I'm afraid one day it'll be too late as they're coming down the road to take our freedoms away. So I think it's time that everybody stand up and pay attention as to what's really going on. But don't stand up too long. We're going to come back in just a moment with Sally Fernandez and Dr. Kristen H. It's an interesting conversation. Well, we're a new breed of talk radio, and with a new breed of host and shows to entertain and inform you. It's America Out Loud Talk Radio, with shows like Blue Lives Radio, OPSEC Radio Special Operations, shows that impact your health, like The Misdiagnosed Life, The Dr. Stem Show, What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy, and our newest show, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us here at America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Should we think before we talk? Should we be careful that words matter? Does any of that apply today? Or, like you say, does it become so uncomfortable we're worried about how it's going to be construed what we say next?
All I can do is speak for myself. I'm a respectful person. I would never intentionally want to offend or hurt. Yet I find myself overly cautious depending on my situation. And it really stymies me from expressing myself. And I think a lot of people, it's closing down the free speech. And the problem is that, you know, the intent is to achieve more diversity. But we're going to end up losing diversity of thought.
Sally, you know what's really ironic about all of this? You know, think about all this, Sally, now. We're speaking right now here, and we're talking on Life, Liberty, the pleasure of the show here in America Out Loud. And here we are. You're speaking to Mr. Out Loud. Now, you know, I always refer to the out loud truth, right, Sally? You know, what's the out loud truth,
yes.
You know? And I look at that, I look at the out loud truth as our conscience. I look at it as saying the things that other people are afraid to say. Now, in the short time you've known me, Dr. Kristen H., you already know that I say things that other people would not say, okay? Now, I always do that in a respectful manner. I try to be a gentleman at all times. I don't always succeed at that, Kristen, but I do give it a good try. And I know my faults. I know where I'm at. But out loud means getting to the out loud truth, understanding the real conversation, the argument, the dialogue, bringing forth. I take myself in a lot of pride that our columnist, our people we have involved in our platform come from all different spectrums of life and all different types of conversation. I wouldn't have it any other way. Now, we tend to track, you know, they say you track like-minded people. I tend to learn more from people that don't necessarily have the same narrative of me, that tend to come from a different walk of life. Those are actually some of the people I enjoy hanging with because it keeps me learning of what's really going on out in the big world. So when I'm talking to you, Kristen, my antenna is up to really understand, okay, what's really going on those campuses? What are the professors doing? And are they doing different than what the media has put out there? Is that even possible? Because right now, I would not have known that if you didn't tell me or give me the honest truth there as to what's really happening. Kristen, you know?
No, I absolutely know. And I mean, I really respect your desire to give the out loud truth. I think the out loud truth here that we aren't saying is that this is all based in oppression. The people that want the safe spaces and who are worried about microaggressions and are worried about trigger words or people who have been oppressed or misused or abused in some shape or form in our country. Some of that has been because of structures of paternalism, and some of that has been because of structures of race. Some of that have been on structures of hate. And it's those structures that I think that we are actively dismantling that we still have to deal with some of the emotional impacts of that. And I think that is what Sally is speaking to, is that she exists in this environment where these structures exist and people have this pain and this hurt because our society did oppress certain people, whether you were Black or Italian or whatever. Our society has made people feel different. And when people were different, that they were oppressed. And now we're working through healing that. And so, yes, if you are working through dealing with that and our country is doing a better job or has been until recent history dealing with people who look different from them, and I'm on a college campus, a place where I want to express myself and I'm there to learn and I want to grow, and I see someone walk by in blackface and that makes me uncomfortable, I think that I have the right and the responsibility to say something about it. The more that we can do to foster environments where we accept people who are different, and whatever that different means, whether that means you just go by the beat of your own drum, or you have different interests in other people, or you look different, or you have a different religion or a different sexuality, whatever your difference is, I think what we're trying to do, and maybe starting on our college campuses and moving to the world more generally, is creating environments where people feel comfortable. And unfortunately, people feeling comfortable may mean that certain people might have to think twice, even three times, about jokes or things that they would have said that just are inappropriate. And if I think if we're making people think twice about jokes that are inappropriate, then that's a good thing, because I think that means we're more cautious and we're being more conscious about the things that we're saying and what that they mean. And we're thinking before we speak. And so although I understand Sally says I can't really express myself the way that I want to because I'm worried about offending someone, I think that's good. That's a step in the right direction.
Wait, but that's good because we should be more respectful, you're saying.
We should be more respectful and we should be conscious of the things that we're saying. Everything that comes to my mind, I get to say. And sometimes I need to be thoughtful about, okay, I think this is the real piece. When I think of something that I want to say or think of something that I'm feeling, if I get nervous that I shouldn't say it, instead of being frustrated that I couldn't say it, I start thinking about, well, why did I want to say it? And what is going on within me that makes me want to say something or do something that could hurt or impact someone else? If I have some sort of privilege and I want to act on that privilege in a way that hurts someone that doesn't have privilege, and I'm frustrated now that I can't act on that privilege, I have to check that. And I have to be like, okay, Kristen, you cannot act in that way just because you want to. I have to check that. I have privilege in some arenas. I'm highly educated. I've gone to some of the best schools in the world. I'm around some amazing people. That gives me a lot of privilege. And I could say and do a lot of things that I might want to, but I can't, because that could hurt someone who doesn't have that much privilege. And that's constant a line that I have to toe. And every American has to toe that, because everyone has privilege in certain environments and not privilege in another environment. It's not just
But that's called common decency and respect.
Exactly.
The issue is who determines what's appropriate and not appropriate. And I think that's where the problem is.
I think we do it together. I think that there isn't one person who decides what is and isn't. And I think the way that you figure out what is respectful and what isn't is the exact way that we do it. One person does something and maybe Sally, like, oh, that seems fine. That's not an issue with me. And then you see this whole group of people who protest. And he's like, okay, well, let me understand why you're protesting this. They give you their background information. But I was like, oh, I get it. For instance, the big thing was Cinco de Mayo and sombreros and tequila and guacamole. I used to do that. And then I sat down with a friend who explained to me why that was hurtful, why I was appropriating her.
Why is that hurtful?
Comfortable with it. And because I valued her experience and I understood. And so I changed my path to do something different. And so I allowed her to tell me what was and was not appropriate in her culture and how I was relating with that. And so that's what it takes. I'm not going to always get it right. Sally's not going to always get it right. But I think we have to be open. We have to be open to allowing someone to change the way that we think about things and to change the way that we do things in the light of respect. Because I didn't realize what I was doing was disrespectful until someone pointed it out to me.
Well, pretty soon we're going to have to give up Halloween because nobody's going to be able to be in a costume of anything else.
If that's what it takes for us to be respectful,
there's nothing disrespectful. That's the part I don't get. It's not your culture.
That's the thing. It's tolerance. It's listening.
There were two women who went to Mexico, They had these lobster burritos. They loved the burritos. They thought they were fantastic. They talked to the people how they made them. They went to different shops that made them. They tried to learn. They came back. They were in, I think, Washington State or something, Oregon. They opened up a shop. They got rave reviews. They got a write-up in the paper. And all of a sudden, everybody came down on them. So somehow, because these two white women were making burritos, they stole the recipe from another country, and therefore they had to shut down. I mean, to me, that's insanity.
It's about power, Sally. It's about power, and it's about representation. And it's about the fact that if two women who were Mexican were living in that same environment, would they have had the opportunity to do the same thing?
I just think that we need to get back on track. I agree with what you're trying to do, Christian, and what you're trying to do in the universities and through all your speaking. I agree with that. I just would like to see a little less talk about how violated people have been and more about teaching them how not to be a victim and get out there and make a life for themselves in the real world. And I just think there's a little bit too much coddling and excusing going on in the universities and in the homes. And I think we should all grow to be healthy, respectful, caring individuals. And you're obviously doing your part to try to ensure that that happens. But there's a lot of stuff out there that is making it much more difficult for young people to be able to sort it all out.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. There's tons of stuff that we're all sorting out. I think the silver lining is that we're having these conversations. I would like to bet that 40 or 50 years ago that you never would have had our mix of people sitting on the line having this conversation. So if nothing else, that's a step in the right direction. I have an exercise with my students where we talk about privilege and what do you do when you realize that you have more privilege than someone else. And it's not apologize for it. It's recognize it and use it to try to help someone else. And I think that's all that it's really about, is recognizing that I have this privilege and that's an amazing thing. And I can do something with this privilege that maybe someone else cannot do. And I want to be able to help someone else. I think that's all that we're looking for, is that acknowledgement. I think it's frustrating when someone has privilege and they don't acknowledge it. It's like someone who's being rich and they, you know, they're in the top 1% of America in income. They don't acknowledge that somehow that access to that much money doesn't give them an advantage in America. We live in a capitalistic society, so of course it gives them some sort of privilege and access. And so I'm not saying, hey, top 1%, you can't be rich anymore, give us all your money. No, but I'm saying recognize that you have that privilege, recognize that you have access to capital when other people don't, and do something good with it. I think that's all we're looking for, is an acknowledgement of a privilege.
Well said, well said. And I should now on that basis acknowledge my own privilege. My privilege to be here as your moderator and your host on this show and on this platform. And every day you give us the privilege to come into your homes and your businesses and your life. And we truly, truly appreciate it. AmericaOutloud.com. America Out Loud is a new breed of conversation with the kinds of conversations you're hearing right here, right now at this moment. Now, listen, friends, it's not like we're going to solve every problem on every show, of course not. But we're going to have that dialogue and bring it to a head. And right away, what I start to think about as we have these conversations, I think about 3, 4, or 5 more conversations we need to be having. You see? So everything stems more conversation, more dialogue, more uniqueness. But listen, for those who out there who say, you know, they turn the volume off or they don't really want to hear what other people are saying because it's their way or the highway, well, that's not where it's at today. And that's not going to get you anywhere. I'll tell you this, I am learning every day, and I am learning a lot, and a lot more from this show, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. We thank you for making this such a highly rated show, and we know there's a reason you're listening to these conversations and the uniqueness of the voices here. We're dealing with these 10 extraordinary women from around the globe. Each one comes from a different lifestyle and a different vantage point. Each one has their own set of shoes, and they each know what it is to walk in them. And it's a privilege for me to be here as your host and your moderator of this production. We thank you for tuning in every day at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 11 p.m. is the encore. Again, catch us on many of the talk radio networks out there. Just type in America Out Loud Talk Radio, including iHeartRadio, anywhere in the world, as well as our own apps on Apple or Android. Just type in America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's easy to find us. Sally Fernandez, Dr. Kristen H. This is Malcolm Out Loud. To be continued, friends.